behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben. We're joined, as always, by our super producer, Noel, we'll work on a nickname later, Brown.
We'll get one.
We'll get one. We'll get there.
Promise.
But that's not all, folks. You may have heard another dulcet tone chuckling softly in the background. That is because we are joined by a very special guest today, a longtime friend of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Jonathan Strickland.
Hey there, Scott and Ben. How you guys doing?
Doing well, thank you.
Ben, I think I detect a little post-CES hoarseness in your voice today.
That's true. If anybody knows, notices I'm sounding a little bit Christian Bale Batman-esque, it's because along with some of the resident mavericks and geniuses at How Stuff Works,
couple of madmen,
Jonathan and I traveled to CES for 2017. In Las Vegas, Nevada. Now, what does CES stand for, Jonathan?
Well, originally it stood for the Consumer Electronics Showcase, but these days they just call it CES, kind of like American Movie Classics just became AMC.
Or the Learning Channel just became TLC.
Part of the reason for that is they've, over the last few years, this show, which is a giant trade show, happens every year in Las Vegas, Nevada. Used to happen twice a year. They had one in Chicago, and then they said, let's just go down to once. This show, it's having more and more technology from further and further out of the your classic electronics realm, like your consumer electronics realm. So we've started to see kind of a shift away from referring it to it as the Consumer Electronics Show, more as just CES. And when you hear CES, you realize, okay, this is the world of electronics as far afield as like industrial electronics in some cases, to vehicles, which is why I am here today on Car Stuff.
Yeah, it's a rare occurrence. We've rarely had anybody in the studio outside of Ben and I for Car Stuff in the entire history of the show. So you're one of very few to be invited into the studio during the recording session.
I'm greatly honored. And this is, by the way, a sister episode to one that we have already recorded but not yet published as of the publication date of this episode of Tech Stuff.
Time travel's weird, man.
Yeah.
Jonathan has been traveling to CES for, what, 9 years
that
now?
That was my ninth year, yeah.
Nine years. Wow. And because of the focus that CES and some manufacturers are throwing on vehicles and automotive technology, we were invited. Car Stuff was invited to travel there. So I went as, I guess, a cub reporter to do the auto beat. And I really, really appreciate the invitation and hopefully didn't embarrass you too much because our boy Strick is pretty connected at CES. And we couldn't walk like 15 feet without him running into someone.
Is that right? Well, after nearly a decade there, I mean, you got to get your name out there.
People
start
to remember you. Yeah.
Yeah.
The entire technology world, as far as journalism is concerned, is there in some respect, right? You've got some outlets like CNET or The Verge with lots and lots of people. TechCrunch was there with their own stage. And also now that we've got more and more automotive tech on display, people from that world are also coming in. And just kind of a brief rundown of how the car world has sort of started to take over parts of CES. Several years ago, some big name companies in technology began to kind of opt out of CES, like Microsoft being a huge one, right? So you have Microsoft leaving CES in order for them to do their own events on their own schedule.
Similar to Apple,
which has always maintained that that's the way that company wants to do business. They want to hold their own calendar of events and not get lost in the shuffle with anyone else. Well, that opened up opportunities for new companies to come into CES. Space had opened up. And that's where the car company started to come in. And it also coincided with a couple of other trends that I suspect we'll talk about this episode.
Right.
Those being the connected car, driverless cars, and various automated products, automated systems. And then as well as just some innovations in vehicle technology in general. Like we've seen in past CESs, we've seen electric vehicles, we've seen fuel cell vehicles, which are very closely related to electric vehicles, and others as well. And so this year, no exception. We saw some interesting and in some cases maybe not controversial, but at least questionable.
Right.
Show floor examples. So I came on here to kind of talk about some of the stuff I saw, and really also to kind of be another sounding board for Ben, because Ben concentrated on that for the entire show. My beat is pretty much all of technology. So I only spent a little time in the North Hall at the Las Vegas Convention Center, which traditionally is the place that's set aside specifically for automotive technologies.
Right. And now, while Scott was holding down the fort, or in our case, the garage, we were out there in Vegas checking on everything from this is definitely happening type technology. Mm-hmm. For instance, smart rear view mirrors, which have been around for a while, right?
Yeah.
And they're marketing directly to people who would just buy these for a fleet or some commercial application. We saw that kind of stuff. And then we saw to the furthest reaches of what automotive technology is capable of, some of which is immensely fascinating and at the same time a little bit disturbing. So, Scott, what we wanted to explore with you is kind of run some stuff past you and see what you thought in plumbing the depths of your expertise to see if this will happen or if it won't, because let's face it, we've done stuff on concept cars in the past,
and sure,
we saw some concept cars at CES, and even more abstract, like concepts of things that could be in cars.
Yeah.
Important
yeah.
difference.
So some of this will be like seat of the pants reactionary stuff for me.
Uh-huh.
Because some of
it's
all new to me. I haven't read about every little bit that came out. You guys were immersed in this for a full week.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried to, keep my eye on the headlines and, some of the stuff that was the bigger news that came out, I suppose.
Sure.
But I don't know it in depth like you guys do. So a lot of this stuff is going to be all new to me as well.
Mm-hmm.
And again, just reactions to what you've seen. I'm curious to find out, I've got a couple questions for you, if you don't mind right up
yeah,
front.
Yeah, lay it on.
So, well, one is probably a bigger question that maybe we'll get into later, but you saw the launch of an all-new vehicle while you were there.
Oh, wow.
And that was huge. I mean, we posted that on Facebook.
Yeah.
That's a Faraday, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah,
but I guess outside of something like that, something dramatic like that, was there anything there that was really earth-shaking, anything game-changing out there?
Oh, man.
Because it seemed to me that a lot of it was more refining what's already already there,
right.
It wasn't like anything was a huge reveal and a big shock to anybody. It was more like we've perfected this.
There was some cool stuff. I think one that Jonathan and I can both speak to came from Toyota.
Yeah, Toyota's their big announcement was really to act as kind of the embodiment of something they had been talking about the previous year. So in 2016, Toyota's big announcement was that they were investing millions of dollars in a pair of AI research facilities, and they were really focusing on ways to advance artificial intelligence as it applies to vehicles, specifically taking a very different approach than some other automotive companies, saying we are not close to having a driverless car. They're not bullish on it at all. They say that's coming. It will get here. But we're further away than some of these companies would have us think.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to be safe and responsible and hold ourselves accountable, we should take a more measured, cautious approach.
Like incremental steps.
Exactly. And so they talked about AI a lot in 2016. And in 2017, they unveiled a concept vehicle, the Concept I, which I argue is not a concept vehicle to show what the car is going to look like in the future, but rather as an actual way to concretely discuss the potential of AI being incorporated into a vehicle. So in other words, you can think of it as a platform. It's not meant to say like, hey, this is going to be the kind of car you're going to see in like 5 years. It was more to the point of, we have created this idea for an artificial intelligence agent, similar to something you would see in Amazon Echo or Google Home.
Like Alexa, Siri kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So what were some of the features that you saw in this vehicle?
Oh,
okay,
man.
Well,
okay.
So Ben, you got to do the demo, right?
Right.
I got to do I was the first person who got to do the demo. It was pretty awesome.
No, you were actually our hookup for Toyota, so thank you for that.
So the demo was a simulated car driver and passenger side up, English style. They had the steering wheel on the wrong side of the car.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd sat down, and there was no articulation. It was really just to get what the experience would be like to drive this concept vehicle of the future. And you had this artificial intelligent agent named Yui, Y-U-I. Mm-hmm. And we could talk about where that name came from, but it's really the most important thing is that it was there to be your interface with the vehicle. And Yui's job would be to monitor your behaviors, your reactions, your body's response to various things that are happening mm-hmm. while you are driving the car. And emphasis on you are driving the car. It is a concept where the AI could take over in cases where it's necessary, but otherwise would simply be enhancing your ability to pilot your own vehicle, which I think, Scott, you would appreciate being the guy who loves to drive cars.
Well, yeah, I like that, but I don't know if I like the idea that it could take over any moment for you.
Well, in this case, it was for things that you might not be able to see. Like, let's say that there's a car in your blind spot and you're trying to get over in a lane. So it'd be kind of like that collision detection stuff.
Just wouldn't allow you to. Or
right.
Notice you're braking too late or something.
Right. A bike comes out in the side street. So let's walk, Scott, through this. So
sure.
You went to Epcot Center at some point in your life.
Sure.
Right. Okay. It's very much, it made me feel as though I were a kid again in an Epcot futuristic ride.
It's a very good comparison.
You hop in, and there's a large, a huge screen that you see through the windshield. You're asked a couple of questions on a touch screen, on a tablet, before you hop in the car. Very basic stuff. Name, you know, so you'd be like Jonathan S. or whatever. Rough age.
Yeah, what kind of stuff do you like to do? Because the idea is this artificial intelligence agent over time mm-hmm. would learn about you, like your preferences.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, would help plan out routes where you would have not necessarily the fastest mm-hmm. trip from point A to point B, but perhaps the most pleasurable. Let's say that you are in a different part of the country and mm-hmm. it happens to know that you really like hiking, for example, and there's this very highly ranked hiking trail that's just a little bit out of your way that the car says, you know what, maybe you would like to experience this. The weather's really nice. It's ideal for a hike.
It's only 8 more minutes.
You've got you've got nothing on your schedule that demands your time. Like, it knows everything about you because it's part of your digital environment.
Hmm.
So it's aware of the stuff that you do.
So it becomes more like a buddy. Ideally.
Okay, I see. It's making decisions for you, though.
Right, so
more like suggestions.
Okay, yeah. Suggestions.
So it won't override you with some, I can't do that, I can't let you do that situation, hopefully.
Yeah.
But so, like, hiking's a great example. So I picked hiking out of these things that you like to do, and so we hopped in, and it said, we're going to this park. Would you like to go to this national park? And I said, yes, because I'm not going to, like, start fights with this thing when we just met. And one other interesting thing is, Jonathan, did you get a male or a female voice?
I want to say it was male, but
I got a male voice too. Yeah. And I think there's something with demographic information from that initial list of questions. So anyway, we hop in, and in this mode on street driving, you would be operating the car. We're not in the demo, but in real life, you would be driving. And then it has a pop-up HUD display, and so this HUD will let you know when there's a vehicle coming out suddenly, a pedestrian, and then it will control that braking if you're not doing it.
Hmm. Right.
And then once you get to the interstate, the seat changes position, and it starts trying to create via rhythmic pressure on the lumbar a slower breathing pattern, and then it goes into full autonomous.
Wait! This car is going to try to control your breathing when you're on
It gives
on
you a
roads?
Back rub, Scott.
It gives you
a little back rub, and it uses interior lighting within the car to promote relaxation, as mm-hmm. well as audio cues to help with that as well. And so
air vents.
Air vents as well. Yeah. So the whole idea is that. This car of the future, keep in mind, this is all proof of concept sort of stuff.
Yeah,
it's not really, it's not really doing these things wholeheartedly, because it's more like a choose your own adventure style experience where certain things are already built into it. So mm-hmm. it's not dynamically doing this yet, but this is the concept they mm-hmm. have. So imagine that you're driving down the highway and your stress levels are increasing because mm-hmm. of traffic.
Sure.
The car would be able to detect that based upon your heart rate, your breathing, perhaps even it might be able to detect it through the steering wheel. And so then it starts to try and promote these relaxation techniques so that you don't have those elevated stress levels. It might take over for you for a while so that you can relax while you are on this part of the trip before handing off control again. And it does so well in advance. So it's not like a thing where you get a little beep and you have a second to respond.
Yeah,
and
it's
then
like
the car's
active consent, active alerts. But also the idea is that people in this vehicle would be able to use social media, check stuff on Wikipedia, call somebody while the car is driving for them, ultimately. And this is where we get into, Jonathan said this earlier, this is where we get into something that might be murky water, the depth of knowledge this has about you. So we mentioned it takes the happiest route. Ideally, what it would do is not just use your information, but use the information of every other UE driver. So let's say we're in, let's say we're here in Atlanta.
Right? Okay, sure.
And we're going toward the new Braves Stadium or whatever. I know. Why would we? But
that
it's
was
hypothetical.
A terrible, terrible mistake that we've made.
Made a terrible mistake.
Right.
But UE won't prevent us from making mistakes.
No. It'll just try and give us the happiest route to our mistake.
Right. Exactly. That's what we're getting at. It would map the data of all the other people who had driven there and all the other people who had driven from a closer, something approximate to our point A, if that was our point B. And so what we're doing then is we're encountering not just the information of Jonathan driving, not just the information of Scott, but also me, also Noel, also anyone else in the vehicle. It would also, because this is one of the questions I asked, you know, when it goes to how much does it know about you, it would have access to some social media things too. It would have access to how you responded, even stuff like your heart rate. It would know when your birthday is, Scott. So you would hop in and it would be like, happy birthday, Scott.
Oh, I don't like this.
Why would you like to go today?
Yeah. So you're just to be clear on this, you're saying that it would network with other Concept I vehicles that theoretically. So it's not just this one vehicle. It won't remember preferences from you when you drove my vehicle. It will remember. It will know what other Concept I drivers are doing as
that's
well.
That's a good question because it has facial recognition.
Yeah.
Ah. Okay.
I think what would ultimately happen is that there would be a centralized kind of cloud-based database. Mm-hmm. And so it wouldn't be that my car is communicating directly with your car, Scott, but rather both of our cars are communicating with HQ in the cloud.
Okay.
And then that information, I would imagine, would be anonymized as best as possible and then aggregated in such a way that you could draw very, very basic conclusions from all that data. So some of that would just be, I happen to know that on days like this, under these conditions, Route C is typically the fastest while also being the most pleasant. As opposed to, hey, your buddy Scott really likes this establishment over here where people dance for money.
Oh,
they probably wouldn't do that.
That's a good concern.
And thanks, Jonathan.
They worked on a lot of you can already tell, I think, that there are a lot of subtle and not so subtle psychological cues and programmatic things going in here. One of my favorite conversations about this vehicle was off the air when Jonathan got some of the initial information about this vehicle. And then later, I said, well, what's coming up? What do you think is worth seeing? And what do you think about this thing? And then we started talking about one of the strangest parts, which is the headlights.
Yeah, they're like little eyes, and they can wink at you.
Oh, no.
And every so often they blink.
Yep.
Really, they do?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No kidding.
It's meant to, again, the car itself, I think, was meant to be a conversation starter, like the design of the car and the lighting. Like, the lighting is actually really interesting, too, because it could control, it had multicolor, multi-hue LEDs all inside the vehicle. So the entire cabin can turn different colors, and the idea is that it can help promote different emotional reactions, that sort of thing.
I think there are production cars right now that have a similar system.
Yeah.
Something like that to set the mood however you want. I mean, custom look.
Also to act as like an alert if something is coming up that you might possibly. So it could be that when you're driving the vehicle, it's under your control and there is a potential hazard that you'll have to react to. The car would be able to send you various alerts visually, audibly and even through touch.
So a slowdown or a stop ahead, it might turn bright red immediately, like, pay attention,
yeah.
Something's happening.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Or it
I
could be that.
That
if there's a report of, say, an accident up ahead, maybe that's what starts to mm-hmm. show up, so that way you are more alert and you can make certain to get over so you're not making the situation more dangerous or, you know, things of that nature. So,
that's smart.
Yeah, yeah. The way I tried to describe it is, imagine that Yui isn't just some sort of artificial intelligence agent. It's also kind of acting as your navigator and second pair of eyes.
Yeah.
Like, you know how you're driving down the road and someone's sitting in the passenger seat? They're also constantly sort of scanning to see what's going on.
Yeah.
Maybe even it's just subconscious, but they might say, oh, watch out, that car's coming over.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Yui is doing, too.
Oh, boy. I don't need another one of those in the car. You know, I got to tell you, I think what you're describing sounds like a cool toy. It sounds like fun. You know, it'd be interesting to drive, but I don't know if I'm really on board with all this. And I think you probably knew that already, that I wouldn't be up for sharing all of this personal information and having it monitor you constantly and also trying to alter the way that you do things. I mean,
yeah.
I feel like, well, right now, I mean, of course, we're all manual. And, you know, if you want it cooler in the car, you make it cooler in the car. If you want to recline your seat or adjust the lumbar support, you do that yourself. I find it strange that it would try to soothe me. The car would try to, you know, create a different type of environment for me based mm-hmm. on what it feels I should be feeling at that moment.
And do it proactively as well. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You know you want the temperature lower before you do.
Yeah, well, I feel like it's just not something that I would personally want in a vehicle.
Sure.
I know a lot of people would. But again, it would be a fun toy to have. It'd be fun to mess around with this.
Well, let me explain what the philosophy was behind these decisions, because I think that makes it really interesting as well. So, again, Toyota is saying fully autonomous cars are on the way. They're probably not going to get here as early as some companies seem to be counting on.
Yeah.
It's going to take a little longer than that. But they said, we want the experience of being in a car to be an enjoyable one. Like, that's what we often associate. Mm-hmm. If you're not always just stuck in traffic, then a lot of people in the United States particularly associate, and we've talked about this before, independence and freedom and enjoyment with the idea of operating a car and being able to get in there and go to new places and have adventures. And that part of that adventure is the actual journey. So, well, we want to keep that. We don't want the future where we have a fully autonomous car to be a cold and sterile experience where you get into a shiny metal contraption and then you get on your smartphone and you read Twitter while you're taken from point A to point B.
Well, I like that idea. That's that makes perfect sense, is that you can still have control, mm-hmm. but there are times when, like, again, in traffic or something, and what's the point at that? You know, you might as well be in an autonomous vehicle
right.
if you're just going to be going less than 10 miles an hour all the way home.
Yeah.
You know,
so
for 40 or 50 miles
so
or whatever.
It makes traffic. The idea is then it becomes, as they would say, more about the journey
yeah.
than the destination. But again, this stuff is, as we said earlier, this stuff, given the tremendous rate of attrition between a concept car or a concept in a car to a production vehicle, this is stuff where we might see aspects of this trickling out in Toyota's production over time. But
yeah.
I applaud their realism when they say, look, the autonomous vehicle for the consumer, for the direct consumer, is not coming as soon as people would have you think.
And likely with, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, for the fleet. However, you know, for an Uber service or a
right.
cab service, it's actually much more likely that those would be the first autonomous vehicles.
I see. I was just going to bring up the point that we might start seeing that stuff in maybe Lexus vehicles first.
Oh,
then,
sure.
Then the Toyota line,
oh, yeah.
probably. I know it's a Toyota concept, so maybe there's something there. But I would think that they'd roll it out to a clientele that typically pays more for a base model, or not even a base model, mm-hmm. but would pay more for that option.
And so,
And
so one thing that we established, and I think this kind of our exploration in Toyota preemptively addresses this question, but one of the big questions I would have as a Car Stuff listener or someone just on this show is, look, man, the calendar year is chock full of car shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We were really close to, as we record this, it is January 9th. We were really, really close to going to the North American International Road Show in Detroit. But we stopped because we had some scheduling stuff. The thing that I'm saying here is that there's ultimately a question of how much is too much. This was very different because it was just focused on technology of this sort. So autonomy, right, connectivity, some alternative fuel, but it didn't really focus so much on things like the drivetrain,
right,
for instance.
Right, right. Yeah. In fact, Dr. Gil Pratt, who is the head of Toyota Research Institute, spent a great deal of the press conference giving what he called a mini lecture in artificial intelligence, which, you know, I'm sitting in the audience. I was the one person standing up going, yay! And he went and very deliberately went through the six levels of autonomy from 0 to 5, mm-hmm, to describe what they were so that people would understand what we really are talking about when we say autonomous cars, because level 5, which is full autonomy, where there's no need for any driver intervention under any circumstance, mm-hmm, that's the one he says, like, we are miles away, pun intended, from that, and then breaking down what the other levels are so that people have a more informed conversation about it. And to me, that was the most beneficial part of the entire – I loved the concept of UE. I loved the concept car. I think it's really interesting. But to me, the most important part of that conversation was him breaking down those levels of autonomy, mm-hmm, so that people don't just blindly use the phrase autonomous car and assume that one autonomous car means full autonomy. That's right, not really what it means.
It's a term that's thrown around a lot recently, especially with Uber in,
oh, yeah,
in cities,
yeah,
and their autonomous programs, and or what they call autonomous programs.
And sure.
Yeah, some of the earlier stuff, we've seen this on the horizon for a long time. Some of the earliest stuff, for instance, would be parking assistance is probably, mm-hmm, a great example of the first the closest production-ready step toward autonomy.
Or, yeah, dynamic cruise control, some of those
dynamic
things too.
Dynamic cruise control is a good example, yeah, as well. But this, okay, so this was one of the bigger, more comprehensive things we found, and it was, I think it was realistic. I think they were definitely saying these are the parts of this that are more science fictional for now.
Yeah.
More like see what we could do stuff. And I really had immense respect for every tech company that said straight up, point blank, the technology isn't quite here yet, but here's what we would do if we had it.
Yeah.
And then we came into – let's go to something a little more controversial. We talked about the Faraday future.
Oof.
So Faraday had advertised extensively over 2016 that this CES would be the unveiling of – production vehicle.
Right.
Pretty tight-lipped about it, too.
Not the super crazy concept vehicle, right, they showed in 2016, which,
right,
was a weird-looking race car.
Oh, mm-hmm. I love that one.
I mean, yeah. I loved it, too.
Yeah.
I got to stand right in front of it, and the whole time, yeah, I just wanted to touch it.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
they were very firm on me not
no touching
it.
They were very, very... very adamant about no touching.
Yes.
But I think you'd like the FF91, too. So... they had this unveiling, but on the way to the unveiling in time, you know, chronologically.
This sounds like a joke.
Yeah, right. People had.
A funny thing happened.
A funny thing happened on
a
the way to
a few funny things happened.
Yeah. And we don't mean funny haha. We mean funny like German expressionism or something.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, so it became increasingly controversial for them to have this conference, and there were a lot of people, pundits and folks who follow auto news, who were saying, well, there's no way it's going to happen. They're not going to do it after this. Some of the things that happened, of course, were, you know, pretty significant setbacks.
Yeah, some high-ranking executives jumped ship.
Yeah.
I think eight total. Six did it throughout 2016, and a couple did it just a couple of weeks before CES.
Mm-hmm.
There were reports that some of the financing for Faraday Future had fallen through. The
investors pulled out. Not all of them.
No, they famously have a guy with very deep pockets in their corner. But so from what we heard, they had halted construction on their production facility, which was being built in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Mm-hmm. This is a billion-dollar facility, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... there were a lot of questions about what's the viability of the company overall and its plans in particular, considering how bullish they were back in 2016 when they first they really shocked everybody when they came out at CES, showed off that crazy looking race car, and said, "Here's our plan. We're going to build a basic substructure which can then act as the foundation for any number of different vehicle configurations."
Very smart.
Very, very clever, yeah. And different drivetrain solutions depending upon what you need. Like if you need a four-wheel drive vehicle, well, then here's how we would do that. If it doesn't need to be four-wheel drive, here's what that would look like. Mm-hmm. And that would obviously affect the weight of the vehicle and the cost of the vehicle. So this year they brought out their what would be their production vehicle, which they say would be hitting the lines in 2018, which is next year, if my math is correct.
You're pretty spot on with your math there.
Thanks, because I'm still writing 2016 down when I write the date. So
that's the point. It has people either concerned or significantly skeptical. However, the vehicle itself, the exterior is done. They're pretty solid on the drivetrain and the specs. They're, I think, still working out some stuff on the interior. So we're not going to have too much on the interior yet. But we were able to speak to a guy named Richard Kim, who's the head of the design department. He's largely responsible for what we would call the DNA of Faraday as a company. He's got a pretty impressive resume because he was the designer on things like the BMW i3. So he's not just some guy.
He's not someone who just joined a startup without any experience in the industry.
Right. Yeah, lots of experience.
He has lots of experience. He knows his stuff. And he's very knowledgeable in this regard. And he spent a lot of time thinking about beyond just this car, just this 2018 model. They're also thinking about, you know, what's coming 5-10 years from now, what is ultimately Faraday as a company, the entire product line.
Well, that's admirable, but do you think that's a good idea? Shouldn't they get this one vehicle off the ground first, maybe, and then think about the next five, along the way?
Is it a flying car?
Oh, boy.
Consider that a spoiler, or some foreshadowing, rather. So we saw this, and I actually left bullish on this because they had smart approaches to things. You know, if they're looking at a time, one of the things that all the startups and all the larger car manufacturers acknowledged, some in less awkward ways than others, was that there are legitimate concerns that people my age and younger, the so-called millennials, will increasingly not want a car, right? The idea here is, again, and Jonathan, forgive me, Scott has had to sit through too many of these rants of mine on this show, but this might be your first time hearing it. There is a large move. I won't call it a conspiracy, but there is a large move to make people in younger age brackets shift from an ownership society to a subscription society.
Sure.
And I think ultimately—
We see it with music. We see it with TV. Yep. We are seeing it with cars.
And we're seeing it with phones. Name a thing.
Sure.
And so I have tremendous issues with this because I think you should be able to buy something and repair it. And when you pay for something, you should own it. That's nice. Maybe I'm just the last of the old school. But the point is, in Faraday's case, this makes it clever because we say, like, okay, a new car comes out using it's like all this amazing technology in a single vehicle, which means that the price point is probably going to be more, no matter how you slice it, than the average entry point for a four-door sedan, which is like, what, $32,000 now?
Yeah, it's somewhere. It's a little bit north of that, yeah.
A little bit north of $32,000. That's hard to put all this new stuff in there, and, like, a lot of it is really cool. I nerded out a lot of, like, I still don't know how they managed to get, just from a material science angle, production quality panels, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like these huge panels that normally would be like hypercars, or excuse me, supercar stuff. They're going to make it on a production thing. And so it's like, well, a lot of people are going to be priced out of this market, you know? A lot of like nuclear family of four or whatever is going to just go for, why wouldn't they just go for something cheaper? What they're also able to do is to have these vehicles based on outside facing face recognition, have them customize themselves to like an existing profile that you would have, calling back to our Toyota concept, right? So like if you're renting, what they're doing is they're saying, well, we could sell these cars to like Zipcar. We could sell these to a fleet and people could walk in. Jonathan Strickland could walk up and Faraday, which maybe Scott Benjamin just dropped it off and it's still on Scott Benjamin's seat settings and all these other minutia, and sees Jonathan walking up and he's the next person to take this somewhere.
And I've got a customer profile with Faraday already.
Right. And so they say, oh, boom, 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 transformer noise. Now it's Jonathan's car.
Jonathan's way shorter than Scott. Let's adjust that seat.
Right, right, right. And Jonathan has a love of accordion music, so let's get that popping. And that's,
all of this is true.
Yeah,
so it's a custom experience then.
Yeah, so it's a custom experience, and people wouldn't be on the line for the amount of overhead capital they would need to buy their own. But then as that production happens, as that scale increases, then of course we know the way the economics work out, then the average price per vehicle is going to go down, and eventually people would be able to buy their own.
Can I make a point here, though? We're already seeing this a little bit with Tesla. I mean,
yeah.
I think the lowest level Tesla is somewhere right around $100,000, isn't it? It's like $96,000 or $98,000.
The sedans are slightly less than that. For the basic sedan, it's less than that. But it is certainly the pathway we saw, because the first Tesla vehicle we saw come out was like a high-speed roadster, and that one was incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
And that's the limited niche interest in that very high-priced car is what allowed Tesla to then continue to create the I hesitate to use the word modest, but more affordable, comparatively speaking, vehicles that would follow a couple years later.
One program funds the other.
Yes.
I got you. It makes perfect sense. I mean, and what you said, Ben, about the price then eventually coming down after they get to a certain point in sales, that makes perfect sense.
Ben, I got a quick question for you.
Yeah.
All right, let's say that I'm interested.
Okay.
And getting one of these FF91s.
Oh.
I say that I'm interested, and I'm like, you know what? There's probably going to be a limited number of these. What would I have to do in order to, I don't know, get on a list?
Well, I'm glad you asked. We're switching to infomercial voice. I'm glad you asked, Jonathan, because it turns out for the very, very low price of only $5,000 U.S., you too can be on the pre-order list.
Yeah, that's a list.
So they're taking orders.
They're taking orders.
Oh, okay. $5,000 so, to be on a pre-order list.
A pre-order list, and they're saying a 2018 delivery date, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just thinking, like, Scott, you don't know how many lists I'm on for absolutely free.
Yeah.
Right. Is that right?
Well, you earned your way on those.
I'm on a
you
whole
earned
yeah,
your way.
I did.
Yeah. You know what you did.
Yeah. I know.
But that's a good point. And we've seen similar things like this. But
Tesla did it.
But the thing is, that's a great example, because now it lends a little bit more belief to the marketplace.
Right. Tesla set a precedent where, you know, if Tesla had not already essentially done this, not exactly what Faraday's doing, but similar enough, I would be even more skeptical about Faraday. As it stands, I'm still skeptical. I'll be amazed if they have a car in production in 2018.
It seems like they can do it. I mean, but okay, do I have to be the one to bring this up, though? And I'm sure a lot of our audience is thinking the same thing. Elio Motors. That's the bad example. And of course, now I'm the negative guy in the room, because I'm saying,
no, this makes sense.
I think another deadline has passed where they were supposed to have 100 cars delivered to customers, and they're not delivered.
Right.
And they're, you know, it's the same old story. It's they need more money in order to get, to get this production ramped up, et cetera. But they're down by like $250 million or something like that. It's like this never ending game of them, you know, for them to catch up, and they're just not doing it yet. So again, I know that sounds negative, but it has to be brought up, because we're kind of in the same position here. There's a product that they're promising. Mm-hmm. That we've seen. Here's a concrete example. You can look at it, not the interior maybe, but you can look at the vehicle. And we've shown you how fast it is, and it competes with a Tesla. You know, the Model S in what, ludicrous mode, I think it was. And it beat it, right? That's something we didn't talk about. That the 0-60 time on that vehicle is like
2.39.
Yeah, which
incredible.
Is faster than the Tesla, 2.5.
That's quite a initial showing, right?
Yeah.
And that's really impressive. But you're asking people to invest $5,000 in something that, you know, it may happen in a year from now.
Right.
To get on a potential list.
And it's unproven.
Yeah,
they don't have another vehicle to point to and say, "Here's our track record." This is the establishment of a track record,
yeah. Right?
So they're looking for, in tech we see it all the time, they're looking for bleeding edge adopters.
Yeah.
The people who are willing to take that risk because the potential reward is that they are in on something really special at the ground floor level.
I totally get that. I really do understand that. And then also there's, you know, the aspect of this that these are the people that can afford to drop $5,000 on something. And if it goes away, it goes away. You write that off as like, well, maybe I'll win on the next time.
Yeah, who knows? That may have been the money they were just saving to spend on blackjack in Vegas, man. We have to remember that people come from different considerations.
That's true.
Yeah, you might have just won that money last night and said, hey, you know what? Here's my chance.
I didn't quite make enough to put a down payment on the Faraday.
And I donated any winnings I had to take in the crew out.
I'm not sure how much you want to talk about Faraday, but maybe what we should do right now is take a break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Well, let's keep it moving. Let's move on to some other things.
Should we switch gears?
Oh, man.
It's a car pun.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I do those on tech stuff.
Good one. Really good
yes.
one.
Yes. Yeah, let's switch gears. So another thing we saw that was pretty impressive, and Jonathan, I'm not sure if your team saw this. So Mercedes-Benz came out with a vehicle intended for commercial applications, a delivery van.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike anything we'd seen before, it's steered by a human being. It would be the guy handling the bulkier packages too, but there are some notable differences. First, the guy is driving with a joystick that is on the left of the on the left armrest.
No steering wheel. Okay.
No pedals either. It's all the acceleration, braking, turning, all this joystick.
Oh, no kidding. Okay. Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Huh. With the left hand even.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, they've made their stake.
Construction equipment sometimes has that.
Yeah,
like
similar.
A Bobcat type.
Yeah.
Kind of.
And that technology exists for people who – like for people who have mobility issues
sure.
as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Already.
Yeah.
The thing where this van really shines is that the interior is lined with shelves, but it has an automated retrieval system similar in some ways to the automated warehouses you see at IKEA, but on a smaller scale.
Oh, cool. Or also Amazon does the same
Amazon,
sort of thing.
Yeah.
I got to see this in passing. My team was literally walking by the booth, and the way they had the van positioned with the back doors open, you could look into it and see this shelving that Ben's mm-hmm. talking about. And I remember walking by and thinking, I want to know what that is, but I have to go to another appointment. So I'm very glad that you were able to take a closer look.
Oh, yeah. We're glad, too. And they were very courteous and allowed us to bend the ear of several people at Mercedes. And thank you to Thomas, if you're listening, who is an expert who put off his lunch break to hang out with us. And he was an expert on one specific part of the van, which was the drones.
Wait. Okay, so it has this shelving system inside.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And where are the drones?
So there are two drones that rest atop on their own landing spots on the roof of the van, and there's an aperture in the ceiling of the van where, let's say you're pulling up and you've got two deliveries on this block, right? Then the automated system will pull the package out of the shelf, will attach it to a thing that contains a battery for the drone, will raise up through, like a series of racks and levers to attach to the drone. So it's got a new battery and it's got the package it's carrying and it's got the GPS information where to go, and then bzzz.
Now that's really slick. So question though then is, how does this whole, so it's on a truck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what do you do? The driver goes to the entry to a neighborhood
or an
apartment building and just parks there?
Mm, it's got, yeah.
Well, especially the idea here is that the drones would only be able to carry packages up to a certain weight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
Because no matter how strong your battery is, unless you've got a very sizable drone, there are going to be certain packages you just can't deliver this way.
Mm-hmm.
So Typically a neighborhood's going to have, especially in the day and age where everyone's ordering everything from Amazon,
right.
Typically a neighborhood's going to have several different deliveries. So a driver parks the van in order to make one of these larger deliveries, goes and retrieves the package from the back. Meanwhile, the drones are delivering the smaller packages. So while my neighbor is getting his 85-inch television, I can get my pack of socks.
Okay.
I do order lots of socks online.
It's a terrible trade, but you should have made yourself get the 85-inch television in that
Sometimes
scenario.
I do get the 85-inch television because they leave the box in front on my stairwell instead of his, and that's a huge pain in my butt.
So the question, though, I mean, I've got more questions than answers in this, really. But so he's not flying the drones then. These
drones are flying themselves, but he does have the driver displays and information that lets you know both the location of the drone, the battery state, and when their estimated times are of return and stuff. And you can look back through the transaction history to see when, or the delivery history, I guess would be a better way to say it, to see when the drone deployed, when it came back. It has all the information and it shares that actively with the cloud. I should say this is not a production vehicle. This is another concept.
And then the idea would be that the drone just drops it off on your front porch. Is that the thing? Or it drops it by the garage door? Or
it drops it
wherever
you would probably have a designated spot, I would imagine. You know, like most of these programs would require the user to work with the distributor and say, when I receive packages, here's where they should be dropped off because it's so dependent upon what kind of house you have.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you have a house that has like a big awning, then it may end up being an obstacle for a drone. It may be, hey, just drop this off in the back. If you have a very, voracious doggy in the back, uh-huh. you're like, do not drop packages in the back for they will be shredded beyond recognition.
Ooh,
that sort of stuff. I imagine that would have to happen. Like, because we're still in an era where these sort of things are being workshopped, I don't think anyone has cracked the code on exactly what is going to be the protocol once they go into full production.
Yeah, okay, got it.
But I think it's a cool idea.
I think it's a cool idea, but there are a lot of problems that you don't encounter until you get this kind of stuff
in the wild.
Yeah,
and once you do, I mean, that's the sort of that's the whole purpose of running trials. You know, mm-hmm. you'll have something where they'll identify one particular market and they'll say, let's run for 6 months, let's run trials in this area, and then we're going to start encountering problems, let's log them all and then figure out how to work around them, engineer around them, and then slowly expand beyond that. And then of course when you move into new markets, you're going to encounter things that weren't prevalent in the old ones. There might be some places that have more wind. Like here in downtown Atlanta, there are certain areas where, because of the way the buildings are, that channels wind.
Sure.
Drones don't handle wind so well.
Yeah,
so
right.
It may be that there are certain parts of town that you'll just identify as no-fly zones, and that's just not ever going to receive this kind of delivery service.
Or like heavily wooded lots, maybe, where
right.
they have to weave their way through, or I guess up a driveway. That would work. But,
you identify a neighborhood where there's a particularly high density of slingshots among the children there.
Right. Or if want to get even further, just to show what kind of problems could pop up. What about the areas of the world, both in India and, I believe, South Africa, where there are aggressive populations of primates running wild? You know,
oh yeah,
wild monkeys,
yeah,
snatching drones out of the sky.
I'm sure that's a huge concern on their part right now.
I'm going to call my next album Wild Monkeys Snatching Drones Out of the Sky.
Yeah.
That's a great album name.
The acronym's a little tricky, but it'll go really well. So I don't want to take too much of our time here, but there's one other thing that I thought you would really enjoy, and I want to hear your take on it. But first, a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. And Ben, you kind of teased me, but you said you wanted my opinion on something.
I think Jonathan and I are both curious for your opinion on this. Fiat Chrysler was also at CES 2017, mm-hmm. and they unveiled something called the portal concept, which critics called the minivan for millennials.
Oh, I was going to ask you about this. I had it all queued up, too. I'm like, now, Ben, let's say that I'm a millennial, but I also want a minivan. Where do I turn to?
Oh, well, Chrysler has the answer. So
this might have been, depending upon your point of view, this might have been the most insulting marketing message on the show floor.
Is that
depends
right?
on your age, right?
Yeah.
If you are of the age range of millennials, which, full disclosure, I am not, you might have found it a little, like, anytime anyone uses the term millennials in a marketing message, I think it gets some people a little squirrely because it's overgeneralizing. Mm-hmm. You know, you're applying this one set of ideas to an entire generation of people. Yeah.
Broad brush.
And you know, then it's patronizing as well. Like,
it's a little condescending.
We know what you are going to want. Here's our design. Now that doesn't necessarily mean the design is a bad one.
No,
just that
not at all. The
messaging itself might be a little problematic.
Yeah. I absolutely agree. Especially since society still doesn't have a clear definition of what this millennial thing is, other than
kids on my lawn who need to get the heck off of it,
or a buzzword. Get their drones off your lawn.
Get their drones off my
lawn. So, you know, one interesting thing about the definition is that for some sociological purposes, it would just be 1981-ish or after as a birth date. Mm-hmm. But one thing that might be a more accurate definition of what could be considered millennial would be people born after near ubiquitous access to the internet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So sociologically speaking, I'm a millennial, but I remember not having the internet.
You remember the time before.
Right.
Yeah.
Which sounds so foreboding,
the
time before.
Yeah.
But anyway,
of the empire.
So what about the vehicle, though? What makes it so strange?
It's kind of like a crossover. Like, it's a smaller kind of Pacifica.
Yeah.
And it has it has a cool side door thing where the doors open up like elevator doors this way, right?
Yeah.
On both sides.
Ben had his hands side by side and then brought them apart from each other.
And forward and apart. Thank you, Jonathan.
As all audio listeners are sitting there thinking, this way means nothing.
Well, exactly.
Elevator doors, that makes sense.
Elevator doors, yes.
Elevator doors that protrude and then go apart, as Jonathan mentioned. And then their idea here is that they want to make the vehicle not just a thing that takes you to places, but a place in itself. They referred to it as the third space. So you would have work, home, and then the car as its own space. And they've done some pretty neat things. It has some autonomy. It has also very high connectivity. So you ideally it would have better, like Faraday has done, it would have a better internet connection than most people's home connections, which is one of the, like, more realistic things about it. They did a really neat thing with the seat design. It's all modular, so you're able to move it around more easily. And the audio itself, which is something that mystified Jonathan and I for a second, was in zones. And this would mean that if the three of us were in a car,
we could each listen to the music that we individually like without it bleeding over to the other person.
Wait. Via headphones, right?
No
headphones.
Nope. No. Just acoustic design.
Okay. This is like taking the zone climate control thing to the next level, right?
Yeah.
Because I often wonder how that even works, but
I've been asking Ben this too, because I did not have the opportunity to have a discussion with these folks, so I immediately, knowing how sound works, which I do.
Which you might have written some articles
I've written
on,
a few,
actually.
I've written a few articles about how sound works, and I've done a few podcasts about how sound works. I immediately began to wonder, how the heck do you keep sound bleeding from one side to the other and not just have it be, you know, Scott's listening to his classic rock, Ben is listening to his prog rock, and me, I'm listening to garage rock. How do you not have it just become a big mess-o-rock inside that vehicle, right? So I thought, well, there's I can think of two unlikely but possible solutions to that.
And let's hear them.
So solution number one, you just subdivide the vehicle into various soundproof capsules,
sure.
Which means you can't have a conversation except through intercom. Because but you would literally have to have a physical barrier to soundproof you from the people in the rest of the cabin.
Totally impractical.
Impractical.
Yeah.
Also, probably one of the it would not be safe at all.
No.
It would have lots of hard surfaces to bounce off of.
Right.
You know, very close to you.
Sure.
Option number two would be to incorporate some form of noise cancellation in between the regions where you're essentially creating the mirror opposite of the sound wave that is being generated. Because if you do that, if you have, you know, you've all seen pictures of sound waves, right?
Yeah.
The little wavy lines.
Yeah.
Well, if you create a sound wave that's directly opposite that, where it's peaking where the other one has a trough and has a trough where the other one has a peak, and it's exactly the same parameters, and you play them together, they cancel each other out. You get silence because essentially what sound is molecular movement. And if you create an opposite sound wave, then the forces are equal but opposite, and so nothing ever moves. So I would assume you would have to do something like that, but I still don't know how you would make it directional to the point where you would be able to hear your music but not someone else's.
And if they are doing that, then why don't they sell that to every single restaurant in town so that you can hear what's being said at your table?
Or outfit an airplane with them.
Yeah, that's perfect. But, okay, so what's the likelihood of them actually doing what you said there for scenario number two? I mean, that they are creating four individual, I guess...
Zones,
boxes, really, you're sitting in?
And full disclosure, again, I do not know that that's what their solution was.
Yeah, right.
It was just those were the two that occurred to me. Now, they're very possible that they came up with a completely unrelated third solution. I'm just not aware of it.
So if that's the case, though, if it's supposed to cancel out whatever's coming from, let's say, my box number one to your box number two, if they're canceling that out, then would I be able to have a conversation with you also, or would they cancel that out?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Highly muffled, almost like I'm yelling to you, but you can barely hear me.
Yeah, still, it's a great point, because if you do, in fact, have that technology, how would it discern that you saying, hey, is this where I need to turn, is actually you talking to me and not like just a crazy lyric in this new Duran Duran song.
This is a strange idea. This is a really strange
idea. I agree. Duran Duran hasn't come out with anything in ages.
Right. And just like that, the Chrysler Portal concept doesn't mention any rollout or production dates.
Yeah.
So this is another concept thing, but it's showing their emphasis, which a lot of companies are making, it's showing the emphasis on the interior or the experience. Some other things that are nifty about this is the customization of the vehicle. So if we were all at a red light and riding together and decided to switch seats, the customizations would follow you to the next seat. So if Jonathan hopped out shotgun, got in the back. No offense, I say this because you probably wouldn't be driving.
No, I'm not offended at all.
Okay.
I'd be offended if you had mentioned that I was driving. I'd be like, that's irresponsible.
And if I hopped in the driver's seat, then this thing would automatically, apparently seamlessly, pick up the Duran Duran Jonathan was listening to, send it to the back zone. And there would also be these touch screens where if you see something interesting, you could swipe it and would go to the community screen. We could all see it. The technology proposed in the portal concept is by no means bad. As a matter of fact, as you can tell, I think there's some clever stuff there and definitely some stuff worth looking into. I still have the same concern about data, which I want to get to in a second.
Sure.
But the primary beef people had with this presentation was just how contradictory at times, how vague and how PR laden it sound to talk about this minivan for millennials, because there's language in there, Scott, where they say stuff like, well, we know that millennials are a diverse group of people with a diverse range of interests, and they don't want to be locked down into any one category, so we made this thing that can be customizable for them, which means that you took a phrase that comes from buzzwords and is generally bankrupt of any meaning, bereft of any meaning, rather, and then you said, okay, the millennials are just like other people. They're just people, and they're diverse, and we're making a car then, therefore, for these millennials, is therefore a car that satisfies every need of everybody.
And it's this minivan.
And it doesn't – that's not how stuff works.
Right. yeah, we should know. We work for a company that's all about
right.
it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's So that's a little bit of a vagary, but other than the marketing stuff and the presentation, maybe that was a little tone deaf, and I think they did start to step away from that just while we were still at CES, not CVS.
Yeah, I agree. They started to see what that initial response was, and they began dynamically on the fly to kind of adjust their messaging because, I mean, what sounds great on paper, often you don't know until it gets out in the wild whether or not it was a good idea or if you maybe needed to rework it a little bit.
And right.
Kudos to them for being adaptable and flexible, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And also, I agree there are a lot of things that are incorporated into this design that are really intriguing to me. Some of them obviously are confusing to me, like I still don't know how that zone audio works.
Right. The cone of silence.
But hey, I mean, if they can make it work, I've got a dog I would love to try it out on. I mean, I love my Tybalt, but he gets a little yappy. So I think this is some really cool ideas. And I think, like you were saying, you know, focusing on the experience, that's something we saw across the board, right?
Yeah, that's a large trend.
And I think part of that is the automotive industry reacting to this concept of autonomous and driverless vehicles. That how do you create a car that stands apart from other cars if ultimately down the road it doesn't matter how quote-unquote, doesn't matter how the car handles because it's always going to be handled by a machine versus a person. How do you set that apart? And starting the conversation now about creating the experience mm-hmm. of riding in a vehicle and having it catered to your individual tastes, I think that's largely a reaction to this destination that everyone sees is down the road. They're not really sure how long it's going to take us to get there.
Right.
But we know that's where we're headed. We know that's where we're going to be eventually. So I think that focusing on the experience was something we were seeing through multiple companies, and not just in the automotive industry, but in the related ones too, the
right.
aftermarket stuff.
Audio
particularly.
Stuff.
Oh yeah, like all the displays and mm-hmm. the various ways of turning your car into what they're calling the third space.
Yeah.
The first space is your home, your second yeah. space is your office, and the third space is your car. All of that to me is really this scramble. Maybe scramble's too negative a word, but this attempt mm-hmm. to address those concerns early before it becomes too late.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. We had an old boss of ours who used to always talk about getting in front of something, right? Get in front
yeah.
of the space and stuff. And it goes across industries. We also saw, and maybe this will be a good cap for our exploration today, but we also saw if we go beyond auto technology, just transit technology, we saw a proliferation of companies seeking to redefine transit in an urban environment.
Mm-hmm.
So many tiny folding scooters, some of which were really impressive, some of which were, you know, maybe just a refinement of an earlier technology.
Some of which are likely a death trap on wheels.
Yeah. Folding electric scooters is what you're saying?
We're looking at the future of mobility in that regard, an upcoming video, mm-hmm. shameless plug, which has things like electric compact scooters that have ranges of up to 20, 25 miles.
Yeah, this all falls under the realm of PEVs, personal electric vehicles.
Yeah, exactly. And
nice for city use.
Nice for city use, yeah. Especially
I mean,
if you don't want to pay how much per year for a parking spot in Boston.
This is the future that was envisioned by Dean Kamen when he came out with the Segway.
Right.
But you could argue the Segway was just well ahead of its time. That the Segway was a technology that enabled a lot of this other stuff to exist that we're seeing at CES these days. And of course, Segway still has a presence at CES. They had a full
sure.
booth at CES,
yeah.
including robots, because I saw them.
Yeah.
That was sort of what Dean Kamen was seeing back then. And now we're starting to see it creep into tons of different designs, some of which are not in the scooter or electric skateboard or,
right.
if you prefer, and I do not, hoverboard categories.
Right.
We're seeing it in other technologies as well, including things like for people who have mobility issues otherwise, mm-hmm. like in wheelchairs and other devices.
Yeah.
We even saw examples of exoskeletons over with the various car companies. The
right.
idea of of either giving people who have limited mobility more independence or to enhance an able-bodied person's capability of lifting, like, super heavy weights, you know?
Yeah, that was Honda, I believe, right?
Hyundai.
It was Hyundai.
I could see somebody on a loading dock or something requiring something
yes.
like that.
Yeah.
Very helpful.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that was one of the examples they showed was a person wearing kind of a full-body exoskeleton that really was just – it looked like a frame that fit around the limbs and
yeah.
would provide support at the knees, the hips, essentially all the joints.
You know, it seems like – and even just – occasionally, that would be useful at home, you know, if you're moving furniture.
Yeah.
If
you're, or you're like you're doing something bar fight.
The, yeah, bar fight, whatever.
A very slow, deliberate bar fight.
Well, if you're in the yard and you need to move all those boulders into the backyard somehow, but yeah. you don't have a crew of people to do it,
yeah,
you
know, boulder
maybe two
day.
People could do it now.
And industrial applications, I mean, that I think that's one of those technologies where the demand is so present that we could absolutely see them. So I just wanted to be clear that the future of transit, and this is according to the large manufacturers as well, the big guys are swinging on this. It's not just vehicles. Ford actually is creating a thing they call Ford Bike Go. So they're doing a bike sharing service. They don't want to be thought of as a car company solely anymore. Now they want to be a auto manufacturer and a mobility company.
Well, okay. And again, I think that this is another response to what we were talking about, that other supposed trend of millennials
right.
Giving up on car ownership ideas. Obviously, car manufacturers are looking to diversify and get into related industries so yeah. that they can remain relevant even in a world where perhaps – maybe 20 years from now, personal car ownership will be the exception as opposed to the rule.
All right. Well, since we're talking about this, I got to bring it up. But many other car manufacturers have built bicycles in the past, too.
It's true.
Peugeot, of course. Mm-hmm. But then there's like Chrysler dabbled in it for a while. Yeah. I think they're Jeep branded bikes.
And Honda started as a bike company.
Yeah. So I know that that's kind of an old idea to build bicycles also. But are you saying that they're trying to create other motorized forms of transportation besides automobiles?
There will be some like electrically assisted bicycles
okay.
that could happen. The only real difference now would be that the big manufacturers would be involving themselves in it. However, I do have to say on behalf of – this probably goes for you as well, younger Car Stuff listeners. On behalf of our like area, our generation, I think maybe a lot of these companies are misreading the data. What they're saying is, okay, yeah, are people my age and younger buying fewer cars? Yeah. But you know what else they're doing? They're buying fewer houses. They're buying fewer large investments because the state of the economy has changed. It's a series of logical leaps to say that because numbers are changing, we can attribute intention or motivation to those numbers. Right,
right. Right. So in other words, there are so many other factors that are at play here
sure.
that perhaps if those factors were not at play, we would be seeing a completely different picture, and it may not be a generational
right.
issue so much as just the state of the economy in general.
A single generation is millions of people. Millions of people have never had the same opinion at once.
Yeah. I don't know. I was in Generation X, and I think we all had the same opinion because we all had the same plaid shirt.
Well, and the hacky sacks.
Okay, you're right. There were two both of us.
Oh, because devil sticks.
I was anti-hacky sack. Pro devil stick.
You were pro devil stick.
I need to bring up one more thing
yeah,
here,
yeah.
And maybe this is it. I'm not sure how much more you have from the show floor here, but I have a question and a couple of headlines that I read. First of all, I saw that they're building a Mustang and a Ford F-150 hybrid vehicle. That's in the works. So
yep.
that's a kind of a change up for them, of course.
And that's actually going to happen.
And the one that I have more curiosity about,
mm-hmm.
because I understand how you know that works. I get that. We talk about hybrids.
Yeah, yeah.
The inclusion of Amazon Echo into vehicles, into your car. Now, I know that's making the news right now. You know, there's a lot of news around Amazon, and also, is it Google Home? Is that the
yeah.
one?
Google Home.
Okay,
Google
Home.
They call it so Alexa is Amazon's personal assistant. Google Home, it is the very creatively named assistant.
Okay, and I think they said the Amazon Echo is what Ford is working with. They're going to integrate that into their vehicles now.
Right.
So, what's your opinion on that? Is that something that you need to have in the car as well? I mean, is it helpful to be able to do stuff like that from the seat of your car?
I think depending upon your what you're using it for, it can be. For example, let's say you're going on a long road trip. And I'll use the example of Florida. Florida is about a 6 to 8 hour drive to get down to like Orlando from here, depending upon traffic and weather mm-hmm. conditions. Let's say that you've left home with your family. You're all going to go down to Disney World or Universal or I don't know, Gatorland. You're going down to Orlando.
Crazy Bob's Albino Alligator Wrestling Pit.
I've been there. It's nice. Try the jerky. So you're going down there and you're getting to the point where you're hitting the Georgia-Florida border,
sure.
The actual Florida-Georgia line, not the band. And you are on your way, and you think, oh, you know what? I didn't even think to check what the weather's going to be like this week. And, you know, especially in the summer, Florida gets these rainstorms. I'm going to check. And you ask your car, like, what's the weather going to be like in Orlando, Florida this week? And then your car gives you an answer.
Yeah, and you say, too late, you're already there.
Well, if you're on your way, then you're like, oh, at the next stop, I'm going to go over to this little Target or Walmart or something. I'm going to buy some ponchos and stuff.
Right, so.
Because
enough.
It's going to be way cheaper here than if I went to Disney World and bought them.
Fair enough. I get it now.
So just general information.
Yeah, but I'm sorry.
No, please. Go ahead.
With this being said, I want to make it clear that, you know, for or against, I'm generally against this, but I will say another pro to dovetail off what you said, Jonathan, which is that from purely from a safety perspective, anything that can keep the driver's hands on the wheel and their eyes on the road is going to be advantageous. So being able to say, and I say this, you know, listeners who are named Alexa, I'm sorry, you're going to have a rough couple years.
If you're also named Assistant.
Yeah. Anybody who's also named Assistant.
I guess technically you'd just be named Google because I just want to try something here. Okay, Google, turn it off. Sorry about that.
So there is a clear impetus here for safety concerns, but the reason that I'm primarily against this goes back to some of the same conversations we've had, which, Jonathan, you may be very familiar with from your role as our resident tech expert or techspert, which mm-hmm. is who owns the data that you create every time you are in the car?
It's a privacy issue.
Well, it's privacy, but it's also profit because, you know, make no mistake, this stuff is going to be another product that is being sold.
I mean, when you ask, like, what is Google in the business of doing, people might say, oh, they're a search engine. No, they are an ad company, and we are the product.
Well, this is one of the major stumbling blocks that Apple's had with the Apple Car. We just talked about this in a recent episode. Who owns that data?
And that's
where the negotiation fell apart, not you know, about some kind of mechanical aspect.
Sure.
It was who owns that data.
And we're going to have – lots of hard conversations about this, not just with vehicles, but with the Internet of Things and related topics. And yes, there are very real concerns about turning your car into what amounts to a marketing engine for all the big brands out there. Like, also the fact that if you are familiar with Amazon's Echo, you know it's always listening. It doesn't we're told it doesn't record everything.
Right.
But it activates specifically when you call it out. Same with Google Home. Mm-hmm. It means it has to always be listening because otherwise it'll miss when you give that voice command, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you start having conversations with someone in the car and you then start noticing that you're getting more and more ads about the thing. Like you're like, hey, have you seen that TV show such and such? And then you start noticing that you're getting ads for things related to that TV show and you're like, wow, that seems a little weird.
Mm-hmm.
These are real concerns and completely legitimate ones. I have argued I am very much in favor of the Internet of Things, but I do so knowing that in order to have an effective Internet of Things, you have to surrender a significant amount of privacy.
I'm not willing to do that. I would not want one of these systems in my car.
Yeah.
Or my home, of course.
I completely understand.
Yeah.
I would be okay with it if there was some sort of profit sharing based on what they're using that data for. Like, if I'm already buying a car, right?
Yeah.
Let's say I'm still one of those people able to purchase and own a car instead of just renting it and being like victimized by the subscription system. What if it is? It's exploitative.
To I get degree. Exploited every day, Ben. So it doesn't even matter to me anymore.
But like, you guys see where I'm coming from, where it's,
yeah.
I've already paid for a car. I'm already paying for a certain system on a monthly basis. And then what they're doing, essentially, subsidize their overhead, making gravy money off the top. So why don't you give me a discount for sharing this stuff?
Like, well, that might be what you get. You might get offers where, you know, your compensation comes in the form of discounts to various products and services.
Knowing
that you
where the
weather
is, yeah.
Or well, like, or if you want to order something and it's like, hey, I happen to know that you really like this stuff. Here's a 20% discount to go with this particular company if you're going to be buying that in the next, you know, 6 months or whatever. Like, it's not a one-to-one comparison at all, right? It's not like getting a check in the mail and saying, hey, thanks for helping us generate revenue. Here's your revenue sharing, the check that you get. No, you don't get that. But what you might get instead are various offers that you can take advantage of where you would be, quote-unquote, saving money, assuming, of course, that you would be purchasing said product
right.
or service already.
Right, yeah. And that's a great point. You're being very fair about it. I believe that there are some very, very, very important questions that manufacturers and consumers have yet to answer. But if we are to open this Pandora's jar and put it in our cars, we must answer those questions before someone else answers them for us. And also, you know, full disclosure, I'm such a crabapple about this that, like, I won't wear a lot of clothing with logos because I'm like, why am I going to pay you to be your billboard, buddy? That's just my thing. One last thing before we hit the road again this week.
That's a car pun.
Thank you, Jonathan. Jonathan, you saw an amazing drone.
I did.
Could you tell us what the E-Hang is?
Yeah, Scott, do you know what the E-Hang is?
I do not.
All right, now, listeners, I apologize for what is about to happen because you won't be able to see this, but just so that Scott has a reference to work from, I'm going to pull up this picture. That is the E-Hang.
Okay.
It is a one-person drone.
Oh, wow.
You fly in it.
Very cool.
Yeah, so it's a...
Definitely look up a photo of that if you get a chance.
It's a quadcopter drone. It actually first hit CES last year, but I was not able to get a look at it in 2016. So in 2017, we happened to be passing by the E-Hang booth, and I thought, well, gosh darn it, I want to have a picture of that thing. So
I like it.
We took some photos. We took some video. Imagine a quadcopter drone, except this one actually has a cabin. It has doors. You can get in, sit down, pilot this thing. So it's more of a quadcopter at that point, not a drone.
Looks like a tiny little helicopter cockpit.
Yeah.
Very small.
And it can have has a flying time of 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
And I am told it is not legal to fly in the United States.
Okay. Get there in a hurry.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? One more. That's really cool.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah.
One more quick thing.
Yeah, yeah.
We had mentioned that we were going to give Noel a nickname before the end of this podcast, and I think
Okay.
Now, you had talked about cars as the experience, right?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So rather than just go with, you know, just calling him the experience, I say we go with maybe the Noel Brown experience.
That's awesome.
That's
I was about to say, if you're going to call him the experience, it's like a little close to calling him the situation.
So
but I like Noel Brown,
so
the experience.
Be like car stuff and the Noel Brown experience.
Oh,
that's like that.
I'm
that's
on board.
Great.
I'll subscribe again.
that's good. I'm glad you remember that. Because Jonathan, honestly, we do our best to remember when we say at the top we'll give Noel or Scott or myself a nickname. We're about 50-50 on remembering to do it.
You're being generous because usually we forget.
Yeah. Well, I'm not the math guy here. So we hope you enjoyed this look. We do want to ask you to check out the companion podcast. So we mentioned at the top of the show for Tech Stuff's look at CES 2017.
Also, we need to thank Jonathan for being here today.
Fine. Thanks.
You're welcome.
No, I'm just kidding.
You're welcome.
I'm kidding. No, seriously, thank you so much, Jonathan. We really appreciate it. Also, we want to recommend for anyone interested in some of the futuristic technology we're talking about, as well as the way this technology interacts with society, check out the Forward Thinking Video and Audio Podcast, which is also helmed by our man Strick.
Yep, you can check that out. Forward Thinking, it's easiest probably to go over on YouTube and check those videos out. We look at what the future could be if we're willing to put in the time and effort to make it that way. Mm-hmm. I always tell people it's an optimistic view of the future, but I also mention, in order for an optimistic view of the future to happen, we have to be willing to put forth the effort to make it happen. It doesn't magically happen on its own.
That's the downside.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point. I appreciate you. I appreciate you making that way. I hadn't thought of it, but you're absolutely right. We are heading out. We want you to check out Forward Thinking. Check out Tech Stuff, where you can see both Scott and, or hear, both Scott and myself making appearances.
Yeah, there was an episode in which I broke Scott's heart live on the microphone.
Yeah, we'll not talk about that today.
But you can hear it right now.
Yeah, you can actually identify the very moment it happened.
And if you'd like to check out some of our past episodes, we have an episode on Faraday Future that I think needs an update. You can visit us at carstuffshow.com, where you can hear every audio episode we've ever done. And oh boy, there are a lot by now. You can also get a closer look at some of the stuff we're talking about with some videos we'll have coming out on How Stuff Works, Facebook, YouTube, and various other internet places.
Yeah, if you happen to cross in front of our office, you might see one playing on
that screen.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, there's so many places you can see our video.
So do check those out. You can also see us on Facebook and Twitter, where we are Carstuff HSW. You can follow Jonathan at TechStuff.
HSW. Yep.
And if you have a suggestion for an upcoming episode, some feedback, if you, like me, have a strong opinion about ownership society as it applies to the automotive world, we'd love to hear from you firsthand. You can write to us directly. We are
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.